Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's the new experience.
Spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Reality Spirituality. I'm your host, Rebecca Lynn Norrington, and I'm so excited today because I've been trying to get this young man on my show for at least a couple of months now, as soon as I met him. But before I talk about Dr. Roger Nelson and invite him on the show, I want to share with my new listeners, because every week there are new listeners to Reality Spirituality, and Reality Spirituality Radio is heard all over the world. And you know, a lot of questions. What is reality spirituality? Who is this Rebecca Lynn Norrington? What is this whole show about? Well, thank you for asking. Reality spirituality is a term that I use that talks about real life issues and our connection, our individual connection with the universe, our relationship with the universe. I use the term universe. Some people use the term, you know, energy, spirit, source, angels, God. It doesn't matter the term. There is an energy, and I use the term universe. And so when you hear me say the universe, that's what I'm talking about. And it's about living connected to the universe. It's about living aligned. It's about living plugged in, connected, plugged in. And you can feel the difference. You can actually feel the difference between being plugged in, being connected to the universe, and not. Because when you're connected, well, let me just start with this. When you're not connected, you feel or have a lot of emotions and reactions and behaviors like frustration, anger, sadness, sadness, or just irritation, annoyance. The list goes on and on, blaming somebody else for or blaming the circumstances for how you're feeling. And what I'm here to share with you is that you don't really have to feel any of those. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But you don't have to feel any of those, and you really won't feel any of those when you're living connected. Living connected means that you are, number one, really solid with the belief and your foundation that this is a journey that you have really no control over. You have control over a few things. You have control over your behavior, your words, your personal vibration, your perception. You have control over your own personal energy. But circumstances, things that happen to you, sometimes, a lot of times, like this week, oh my goodness, it was just an up and down and up and down. I can't even tell you the things that happened, but you're in that foundation. When you're connected, you know that, number one, everything that is happening for a reason. Everything that's happening is happening to get you to another level of awareness and consciousness. Everything that happens is happening for your betterment. Everything that happens is because it's all in order. It's supposed to. And when you trust and when you surrender, which is it's easier to say than do, but when you trust and you surrender to every moment, you begin to live in a way of you're just flowing through this life, as opposed to resisting, as opposed to judging, as opposed to labeling and finding something wrong. You focus on what's right. And also, you know what, I'm getting into the whole show, and Roger's up here on my show. Oh, geez. Okay, let me just stop because I was on, I would have been talking for a long time. Let me introduce Dr. Roger Nelson to the show. Dr. Roger Nelson is the founder of the Global Consciousness Project, and I met this wonderful young man 2 months ago at a retreat in the Catskills in New York, Peace Village, and we were invited by Sister Jenna because we both had been radio guests on her show. And I'm telling you, the coolest energy, you would never even know how huge this guy is. He's a long-running international collaboration of 100 researchers studying interactions of consciousness and the environment. He is an experimental psychologist with a PhD from New York University. His background also includes physics and engineering. Nelson was a research coordinator for the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research Laboratory at Princeton University from 1980 to 2002. You know what? Without further ado, welcome to Reality Spirituality, Roger. Thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you so much for sharing with my audience your expertise and your wisdom and your knowledge. Thank you.
Well, Rebecca, thank you. What an introduction. And also, you were on a roll. Nothing wrong with that.
Listen, I have to stop myself. We spoke a little bit before the show, and Roger was telling me, well, you know, sometimes I get a little long-winded with answering questions. I said, listen, long-winded, I can do the same thing.
That's where we live, right?
Yeah. So, and I also invite my audience to call in. Dr. Nelson has agreed to answer any of your questions. So the call-in number is area code 646-564-9619. Again, 646-564-9619. Guess what? It's time for you to speak. But let me ask you a question. In the beginning, no. How the heck did you get to this place? Just give me a little brief background of your beginnings.
Well, I was born. I grew up in Nebraska, and there I became, for reasons I don't recall, interested in something like judo, jiu-jitsu, the kind of martial arts business, and I couldn't find any information about that, but I did find information about yoga. And then not much later, I found information about parapsychology, a book written by J.B. Ryan, the past 60 years of research in something I'd never heard of, which is, how does the mind connect with the world? How can we mentally connect with each other and so forth? So as a high school kid, I started doing some experiments with my friends, and we found results that were amazing in the sense that they didn't knock your socks off, but they were significant, and that Ooh. Was deeply meaningful for me.
Please be specific. Specifically, give me an example of one experiment that you ran in high school. I'm really curious about that and the results. Really, you know, specifically, what was the test and what did you find?
Well, the kind of things that we saw in the literature we read were you might think of as card guessing games. They had created a small set of cards, 25 cards, with five repetitions of each of one symbol, very distinguishable things like a cross and a circle and a wavy line. And you give people a deck of those cards and ask them to guess what the card is going to be that they're about to turn over. And what happened was that they were right more than they should have been by chance. But they were not right every time. That would have been a miracle that would turn me off and say, there's a cheat here someplace. But they were right a little more than they should be, just enough to make a scientifically curious person say, wait a minute here, and this needs some deeper examination.
So Yeah, so you were hooked at an early age, so your direction without even knowing you were on your path early.
That's right. And I went in all kinds of other directions, did graduate school, and I taught regular psychology, and I also did a lot of art and music things in between. But at some point, the students in my experimental psychology classes were saying, wait a minute, I've heard about parapsychology. I've heard about telepathy. I want to do experiments in that. And so I didn't really know much, but I said, do a good experimental design and we'll just go for it. And then after I'd been teaching for a few years, I saw kind of by accident an advertisement for the job that I eventually took in Princeton, which was to work in a laboratory with several other people on asking the question, what happens if we are strongly emotional and we're in a stressful situation? What happens to the high-tech instrumentation, the very sensitive electronic devices that surround us more and more? Like, think about a pilot in a modern jet air fighter or an airliner. And there's we have such sensitive instrumentation. If the human consciousness or mind can connect with physical devices and change the way they behave, we need to know about that so we can, you know, design around it. So that was the start of that Princeton engineering school laboratory. And I worked there for many years. And among the
let me throw something in really quick, because you said a word that quite frankly I have banned from my life by mistake. You know, Roger, there are no mistakes.
That's right. My favorite chapter in a book that I perennially write is "Design by Coincidence."
Oh, I love it.
Exactly what you said. Nothing happens by chance, or there is nothing that's happening that isn't supposed to be. This is what happens. Yeah. That's where we live.
And so the suffering comes from thinking that what's happening is not supposed to happen.
Right, yeah. But in my case, what happened was good stuff all the way down.
Sure.
So I moved to Princeton, started, you know, doing this intriguing work with a bunch of very interesting people, and many more interesting people coming through the lab. It's a famous university, and we were doing infamous stuff there. And so it was a natural congregation point for curious minds. And you'll have to diplomatically interrupt whenever you need to.
Oh, please. Of course. I promise I will.
So,
as soon as I'm falling asleep, I'll tell you, let's go to another subject. No, keep.
Yeah.
No, go on.
I've been spending the last almost 20 years thinking about how consciousness interacts with the world on a much grander scale than what we could touch in the laboratory. And that we've moved in the direction of the grand scale by doing what we called field REG experiments. We take a random number generator, which is a device that just, you might think of it as an electronic coin flipper, really super fast and completely accurate and recorded in computer files and all that stuff. So a really good instrument. We decided to take those to concerts that were, stand up and clap, everybody together, and rituals which are designed, from thousands of years of experience. They're designed to bring people together into one consciousness, to a shared understanding or feeling or intention. Ritual is absolutely interesting. I mean, it's a fabulously important thing, which most of us don't think about much. Or we would take it to a place like a meeting. It could be a couple of different kinds of meetings. It could be something academic.
A football game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are people together or not? And people are together. At least half the people are together. The other half are not so much, right?
Well, yeah. If you're
not going their way.
Right, right. Uh-huh. But I'm talking about like a home team, and but just the energy of the home team rooting for their team. I totally get it. You can feel the energy in the crowd. Okay. Now, but you know what? This is really interesting. But before we go on, I'm going to ask you a question that's going to lay out the entire interview. You ready? It's really
deep. I'm ready.
What is consciousness?
Oh, you would have to ask.
Of course,
but,
come on.
You know, I have a unfortunately clever answer. Consciousness is that which allows you to ask that question. But it doesn't help very much in answering the question you really have in mind. We are conscious creatures, and in a sense that, as far as we know, most others are not. Namely, we can reflect. We can be aware that we are aware. We can do this kind of hall of mirrors things where we're studying what we are while we're studying it. And that is the kind of consciousness that I usually talk about. Consciousness is something that is probably a confluence of a whole lot of different things, like brain activity, like experience that may or may not be purely a resident in your brain activity, and intention, which is even less clearly a function just of brain activity. Who are we? What is life? These are the kinds of things that we have to understand if we are to understand what consciousness is. Consciousness really is life in a form that is variously just a concatenation of a tremendous amount of information, all the way up to being self-aware and able to think about the question. So I'm not sure that's a helpful answer to your question.
No, that's a great answer, and I actually wrote it down. Being aware that we are aware, and that's so key, because my biggest challenge in my own life is, I don't know about you, but I lived the majority of my life, I say, unconscious, meaning that I was just reacting to things, reacting to people, reacting to circumstances, as opposed to choosing my reaction. Conscious, listen. So it's really...
Oh, I know what you mean. I mean, the truth is, at least some of the wise ones say, we have to work to become conscious in the sense you're talking about. Otherwise, we are, as some of the wise ones, somebody like Gurdjieff, for example, will say, you are sleepwalking through life. Basically, we are almost always asleep in the sense that you're talking about. If we make an effort and learn how to do it, we can be awake. We can wake up. You know, I picked a coffee cup this morning that says "Wake Up" on it, and from a movie in which I did a small part. It's about that very thing, being conscious.
So now you're bragging about your Academy Award.
Oh, why not? You know. I mean, we have to be aware, right?
That's true. You know, but
no,
I
love the coffee cup.
because
of the idea.
That's the key. The key is, and what I share is this consciousness. Once you really realize that, and like you said, be aware of being aware. So the practice is, are there any? Because I got so many questions in my head, but let me ask you this one. Is there a way to wake up? How do we wake up? How do we live consciously?
Well, I can highly recommend reading Gurdjieff and his various people like Ouspensky and whatnot. But Gurdjieff was very direct. Basically, he would, there are exercises you can do, but the first thing is to take a bit of understanding. You know, first thing, you have to recognize that most of the time you're not awake. You know, most of the time you are. You said it very well. You're reactive. going through life being responsive to what happens to you rather than being decisive about what will happen in your life. And Gurdjieff, for example, makes a distinction between intentions and decisions. So he says intentions are dime a dozen. Basically, it's easy to have an intention, but what happens to the implementation? He says, and now this is a very special definition of decision. He says, a decision means it will happen. So if you decide, then you are in a different universe from the one you're in if you merely intend. Like intentions
Ooh.
Can be, yeah, okay. Now that's
yeah,
that's
because I've actually never heard that one before.
That's very intense stuff, and it's like it's hard to take it in, but it's worth trying because it will allow you to be a little bit more awake. It allows us to be more awake if we realize there is a distinction between having a good idea and making that a good idea happen. You know, that's a potent kind of understanding. And it is also what distinguishes being asleep and being awake in this context.
Let me just go back just a little bit because to the audience that being awake versus being asleep. I was awake most of my life, and there is a reason why. It's not my fault. It's not my fault because no, it wasn't my fault, Roger. Because my parents were asleep, and so this all of this is learned. I mean, I learned how to react.
Yeah.
I learned. Listen, my parents, you'd sit there and they criticize which way the wind would blow. So it was always in a world of judging and critical and something's wrong, something's right. Judge. I said that already. So. I learned all of those behaviors, and so now what I'm finding in this life right now is unlearning everything that I learned. So I don't want the audience to think, oh, you're asleep, but we learned all these behaviors, and we actually have to go back. And what I also want to share is being conscious or living consciously in every moment is a skill. It's a skill just like any other. It's a skill just like the greatest basketball player or the doctor or the opera singer. It's a skill or the artist. It's a skill, and it's a developed skill and a skill that requires practice. So if you want to be more conscious, you just have to practice. And you just start off with small things, just being conscious in every moment.
And the business of practice isn't just a couple of shots at it. I've recently read some really persuasive article that says 10,000 hours. Now that sounds like a lot, and it is a lot, but it is what's required to get to the top of the game.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be an opera singer, you're not going to make it if you only do 200 hours. It needs 10,000 hours.
That's right. And so now you come down to, you really come down to a decision, because I teach classes the importance of happiness, and a lot of people come in and out, and it really comes down to what is their priority. What do they want more than anything else? And people always say, oh yeah, 10. From 1 to 10, how happy, what is your, is happiness priority? Oh, it's 10. But then their behaviors shows that their happiness priority is maybe a 5 or a 6.
Right, and there are all kinds of other things that happen first.
That's right, that's right. Okay, back to you and back to your...
Wait.
Go ahead.
I have to diplomatically interrupt and say,
please.
I really wanted to mention one very nice exercise that can help people understand the difference between being asleep and being awake. And this is like very fundamental basic, but try this. Every time you walk through a door, a doorway, like a passage opening, be aware that you are doing so. It is like such a revelation. Every time, and you will find that you walk through a lot of doors and you don't notice, but if you pay attention, if you remember that a door is a signal for you to wake up and notice that you're doing it. You can do this with other things, too. My son mentioned last night that a friend of his says, pay attention to flies. Every time you see a fly flying around, don't just think about swatting the fly. Be aware that you are looking at the fly or hearing the buzz of the fly. But I like the doorway one.
I love the doorway one. Okay, so I'm going to throw out my exercises. You ready? So I like to use the, and everybody's different, so we have our senses, our smell, our sight, our touch. And so just be aware of, just start using any of those senses. Just, okay, what do I see? I see a white door. I see a yellow wall. I see a picture. Or I touch. I'm touching a wooden table or a leather chair. So just use all of your senses and choose which ones you like to practice. And then it's an exercise and it's of practicing. I love that.
Yeah, and the doorway one is especially nice because if you think about it for an extra moment, you see that a doorway is a transition. It's from, and it may be an amazingly important transition, could be a very mundane doorway, and yet be one that, on the other side of which, your life is different and better.
I think the doorway is one of my, I like that, the doorway. So you're coming from, you're always going in, moving, like you said, transition, and you're always, like you said, always going through doorways. Yes. All right.
Yep. Yeah, except, I'm sorry, that was...
No, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to be a Lakota Sioux when I was young. I grew up in their area. It wasn't feasible. But part of the reason was that they were so wise about where they lived, which was on the earth, in the earth, as part of the earth. And of course, they didn't have doorways, but they were already conscious of where they were going, I think, in a way that most of us are not. In other words, they were strikingly awake because of their closeness to the natural world in which they really lived.
Love it. Now, I'm going to ask, are there places... Let's get back to the global, conscious, yeah, the project. Because can you explain what that is? I can't believe how much time we have left. We have a little bit of time. We have a half hour, but just seems like it's just going by so fast. Explain what that global consciousness project is, and what you did, and how it's set up right now?
Yes. I got to the point of talking about group consciousness when people come together for a ritual or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that very interesting work started me thinking about a really big group, namely the whole planet. And this was inspired partly by Teilhard de Chardin's writings about the future of man, where he talked about a noosphere, which means a layer of intelligence for the Earth. And he said, our evolution isn't finished as the so-called pinnacle of evolution. We've got another stage, at least another stage to go, which is to become what our potential is, namely a connected humanity that provides an intelligence like a brain, a consciousness for the Earth. And so I thought, I have this technology. It can measure group consciousness. Why not put that all over the world? So I asked people who might be interested, would you like to host what we called an EGG, an EGG, which is an abbreviation for an electrogyogram, because what we were thinking about was making something like an electroencephalogram, an EEG, which is the skull cap that they put on your head in order to measure your brain activity, which presumably will tell you something about consciousness. So we wanted to do that for the Earth. And so we wound up putting these devices all around the world, connected to computers, which were in turn connected to the Internet. The devices would produce random numbers. The computer would send them back to Princeton, and they would all be put together in a big database. And so what we then were doing was collecting a database of parallel random sequences, one new trial at each of maybe 60 nodes around the Earth, continuously, every second, minute after day after week after, and now 17 years. So we have this swath of data unrolling that has, basically we have a history of data. And the question that we were prepared to ask from the beginning was, is there any change in this history of data when the history of the world has big events defined as something that brings huge numbers of people into a kind of coherent focus, especially emotionally? So there are big events that do that now and then, without question, even though we don't have a direct measure. We know that a zillion people, that's a technical term, every New Year's, right?
And let's give examples of big events. You said New Year's and tsunamis,
New Year's,
9/11.
9/11 for sure, yeah. That was, so when we ask, what happens to our data stream, this long unrolling tapestry, what happens during something like 9/11? And what happens is the data are not random at such times. They change from being completely random, completely unconnected, independent. They change to become slightly correlated, something that they shouldn't do given the nature of a random number generator and given the fact that they're thousands of kilometers separated from each other. But they become slightly correlated during these major events. And apparently, I mean, the design of the experiment is such that we know that happens in a correlation with, or exactly as it corresponds to, these events in the world that make millions or hundreds of millions of us share synchronized emotions and thoughts. So that's, that's the design. That's what we do.
Wow. We have a few people in the queue that want to ask questions, so let me. Fascinating. Hold on a second. Welcome to Reality Spirituality. Is this Jay?
Yes, it is. Good morning.
Hi, Jay. Welcome. Jay, this is Dr. Roger Nelson.
Hello, Jay.
Hey, Dr. Nelson. Hey, I'm just listening to the conversation. I got some questions for you regarding consciousness. I just wondered, when scientists are trying to or doing something with consciousness, they're trying to measure it. I just wondered, it seems like we can't measure consciousness except for maybe to see signals or something on a electronic device, or trying to prove something. But I just wondered, wonder if your research goes into deeper than the ancients? They didn't do all the studies; they just know it worked and left it like that. Just wonder what your thoughts about that is.
My thoughts are that even though I agree with you that we've always understood at some level, and mostly the wise ones among us in a profound way, we've understood that we are conscious, that we're connected, that we are all part of one universe and so forth. But we have a modern age in which tremendous numbers of people have come to believe, they've been propagandized, I think, into believing that we're... it's better for us to be selfish individuals and be separate and isolated and so forth, and basically to not connect. But I would like to do what I can as a scientist to provide some evidence for the old understanding that we are connected and it's important that we be so. So that's what I'm, that's my motivation as a so-called consciousness researcher.
Does every living being have consciousness, or and
probably even
more?
Non-living beings? There are some models. This is a philosophical thing more than a scientific thing, but there are some models of the way the universe is that say consciousness is fundamental. That's what we start with, and that implies that every electron, every stone, and every rivulet and ocean wave has consciousness, not just us, not just us and our favorite animals, but everything.
Favorite animals.
Yeah, like hawks and tigers and stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention our wonderful, lovable cat.
Good questions, Jay.
Yeah, I have one more question. Is that okay? Is that
yes,
you,
sure.
Rebecca?
Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, Dr. Nelson, what was your most intriguing project regarding measuring consciousness? Or do you have any other ones planned in the future?
That's an interesting question because I guess I'm not a person that does favors very much. I like the whole thing, you know. It's just like an ongoing revelation, and I'm privileged and grateful for it to have been able to, work on answering some important questions. There are a lot of things that, in a sense, don't need to be proven, but they do need to be understood better, and that's immensely rewarding work to be able to help move in the direction of understanding who we are, what we're here for, and what is, you know, what we know the answer already. It's 42.
What?
42. It's the answer to life and everything, you know.
42?
Yeah. Well, this is a reference to a science fiction book that lots of people know about.
except for one. Jay, did you know about 42?
No, I didn't know about 42.
Thank you. See, Matt,
well,
thank you.
We'll
two
have
people
to have another
know.
Show to talk about 42.
Okay, good. Well, listen, great questions, Jay. Thank you. You're always so good with great questions. Thank you again for calling in. You know, that's so funny, 42. 42, I'm thinking, what, 42nd Street? What the Broadway show? What, 42nd? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Google will help.
You know,
what's the answer to everything? 42.
Ah, what's the answer to everything? I have that answer. Do I?
Yeah.
You know what? I was listening to your Jay's questions, and of course, you know, he brings up even more questions for me, which is so, I love that, the interaction. Is there a place, because are there places in the world where our consciousness shifts just by us being in that place?
Wow. Nice. When I was doing that, what I called field work with random number generators, I had several opportunities to go off and to places. I'll mention two of them. One was Devil's Tower in Wyoming. It's a natural monument. It's the core lava uplift from a volcano, the rest of which has long since eroded away. So this incredible pillar that's hundreds of feet high of basaltic rock that remains there. It's a sacred site to the American Indians or Native Americans. And I went there with some other people for various purposes, and one of which was to trek around that monument with a Shoshone shaman whose mission was to repair or heal the kind of like spiritual damage done to sacred places like that. And so we stopped at a place and which he called a power spot and did a ceremony. He did, and we participated as observers, really. And my data from my portable random number generator went way off in the direction of which means increased coherence. Okay, and I had previously tried to explain what we're doing with this electronic stuff, and he just kind of shook his head. I showed him the graph later, and he said, now I know what you mean. It was great. And the other thing was Egypt with a group of people interested in the ancient religions, this ancient monuments, really. And we went to all the temples that we could and to the Great Pyramid and so on. And I'd had one question, which I knew I wouldn't be able to answer, which was, are these places sacred because they were there and we found them? or did we make them sacred by becoming, by bringing our spiritual interests and longings repeatedly over years and centuries? And as I say, I knew I wouldn't be able to answer that question, but it was one that I had in mind. And was very the results were from that series of data collection events was astounding. There were one after another, these sacred places with us as a group in there meditating or in some cases chanting. They were people say off the charts. They were one after another. They were strong deviations from what's expected from random number generators. It was absolutely spiritually amazing.
Wow.
And
so
I still don't know. But I will. And in your question, there was one exception where we were in a temple called Philae, and the data line was flat. And I sort of thought about it for a while, and there might be a connection with the fact that Philae was moved from its original location, which the ancient Egyptians thought was, staked out by the gods. It was moved because of the Aswan Dam. It would have been flooded and destroyed. So the archaeologists moved it, and it was a beautiful job. It still looked like an ancient temple, ruins, of course, but that one didn't show the same inclination as the rest of them.
Okay.
Maybe that's meaningful. It may be an accident.
That's really interesting. So I'm going to ask you a personal question, and you can ask it or answer it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So in the world where, in other words, you feeling, I know you have your device with you and you're looking at the device, but I'm talking about Roger Nelson, the individual. Where have you felt the most connection or the connection to consciousness where you've traveled just by yourself, not just like you sat there? Because I have three in my head for me. You sat there and you just like, wow, okay, I'm feeling connected just because of where you are.
Interesting question. It deserves a serious answer. But the first thing that comes to my mind is that the place becomes sacred and becomes special and deeply meaningful to me as a function of what I'm bringing to it. Like if I'm in a pretty good frame already, and I sit still in a park in the middle of a big city, it can be really very good. It's easier for me though if I'm sitting on a plate on the edge of the cliffs overlooking the Pacific at Esalen, or hanging out in the hot tubs at Esalen, something like that. That's a place that has deep, deep resonance for me. Partly because it's just there doesn't need to be anybody around. I'm still moved deeply by that kind of space. But I'll mention another one.
Peace Village?
What?
Peace Village?
Peace Village is fine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The one I was going to mention, though, is Estes Park in the Rockies, which, there could be 100 places like this, but this is a place where I can stand basically on the top of a very high mountain range and look out over the receding depths into the distance and say, this is so strong. This is such a manifestation of the real God's work that we cannot destroy it. I'm afraid that I may be wrong about that. We can, but we have to learn not to, if you see what I mean. But then that's another kind of situation where I can look out over the immensity of the world and the universe. Stars will do it for me too.
Right.
Say, this is, yeah.
You know, and I asked that question because I distinctly remember, don't tell anybody, I hope nobody's listening, but there was a time in my life that I did not believe. I went from, going to church and Sunday school and all that kind of stuff and being forced to believe in God. And then there was a time where I did not I was actually a real atheist. Please don't anyone listen. An atheist for, I don't know how many, maybe a year or two, I don't even remember. But I remember taking going to Monument Valley. The trip was actually to the Grand Canyon, but
oh, wow.
4 hours drive to Monument Valley. And I just we were on a little jeep driving in between the monuments. I'm getting chills right now, and I just said, "Oh, there is a God," and I was done with that atheist stuff.
Yeah. I have remarkably similar kind of experience in the sand hills of Nebraska. This is not something most people would ever recognize as such a place, but it's the Native Americans I mentioned before, the Sioux. They had an expression for the feeling. The expression is wonkenton, and that means, in their language, the experience of understanding what you're looking at is all God's work, none of man's. You know, you look out over the if you're in the middle of a desert, you look out over this amazing vista, or the sand hills, looking out over sort of a ripples of what once were, I suppose, the dunes by an inland ocean. It's incredible. If you just open up to the beauty of the world as it is, and as it was sort of forever into the past, and as we can hope it will ever be.
Okay, I've got a really, really tough question for you just because of what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Ready?
Yep.
Put your seatbelt on this one. So... man's work versus the universe, man versus the universe, you know, which is which. You're distinguishing the two. Yes?
Yeah. I know what's coming.
Oh, you know.
You're right.
You're so smart.
We are God's work.
Yeah. And so even whatever man is doing, whatever man is doing, is it still God's work?
Well, I think we're back to what we were talking about at the very beginning. We have the option to choose, to decide, and to make a move, which is one of many, maybe an infinite number of moves that are potentially in front of us. Which one do we choose? Which decision do we actually make? So God provided us that, and we have to deal with it. We can't just lean back and say, "Oh, it's all God's fault."
right. Well, not to. In other words, even the things that I used to look at and say, "Oh, this, there's something wrong with this behavior," and I mean, I don't want to get really specific, but looking at the world and looking at people and their behavior, and even the, quote, worst behavior, the 9/11, for instance, is that still all in order?
It is what happened, It is the way the universe has unfolded. And there's a wonderful line from the Rubaiyat, Omar Khayyam, says, "The moving finger, having writ, moves on, nor shall all your piety nor your wit bring it back to erase or change half a line."
Hold on a second. I have to hold the phone with my shoulder and clap.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Great. Interesting. Very interesting. Is there anything that you would like to add in the conversation, and I because anything that I didn't cover, I'm actually so fascinated by all of your work and just so grateful to have befriended you in such a short period of time and connected with you. Is there anything that you would like to add that I didn't talk about or you want to share with my audience?
Well, I mean, there are a million things, Rebecca. The feeling is mutual. I really, Peace Village is a wonderful, wonderful experience and a place to gain some, you know, to meet friends who at first you wonder, how could she not think compassion was really, really important?
Oh, I was, listen, I was just going to ask you that question.
I'm ahead
no,
of
it, no.
On this
oh,
one.
I love that. Perfect. Okay, here we go. Let's get into it. Not that compassion is not important. That was not what I said. What I said is
okay,
compassion. Is compassion universal? Is that a universal?
Oh.
Is that a universal concept? Because I don't see the universe having compassion. I don't see nature having any compassion. Man has compassion, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but
that's
is
a very
it universal?
Interesting way to put it. Like, you know, it's back to the inevitability, at least in large part, for the universe in. Maybe in this context, as best we can put words on it, the universe doesn't care. But I'm not, you know, it's not something I'm sure about one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Does the universe not care? If so, why would something like thinking human beings who have at least the potential to benefit each other and Earth and everything about, you know, the context in which we are, you know, why would that arise if it weren't for something, not compassion really, but some kind of creative expectation or intention on the part of something that is too vast for us to even begin to name it, let alone think deeply about it, the
mm-hmm.
universe.
Okay, so
yeah,
I'm actually just thinking, and I. Lost my train of thought, compassion, universe. Anyway, yeah, lost my train of thought right there. But it'll come back to me, or not. Yeah.
You have to have compassion for yourself. Otherwise, it won't come back.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Thank you. You just reminded me. So, because I look at the universe or perceive the universe as this entity that is all, you know, a laws of the universe, the law of gravity. You're going to fall off the building when you jump if you are the most pious or you are the serial killer. So that's when I come back to the universe doesn't, it's really about laws as opposed to this touchy, the compassion. I get it. I totally understand what you're saying. I just have a different take. And it helps me with, it helps me when I look out and I see things that that actually make me cry and make me feel, oh my God, I was listening to, you know, all the 9/11, looking at all the 9/11 over the weekend. And this woman, you know, was talking about her son. She goes back to 9/11 every year because that's where her son breathed his last breath.
Yeah.
Getting choked up again, but. So
I'm totally you know, with you on that, and but may I add a note to it, where I begin to cry is in our response to 9/11. We had, and I felt this strongly at the time, we had an opportunity to forgive, move on, to live in a world that has, you know, human compassion in it. I really felt deeply that we were, because of this horrible moment, brought together as a humanity in a way that was unthinkable without some event like that. But it was possible for us to capitalize on that, grow and become more of this noosphere, this sphere, this sheath of intelligence for the Earth, that Teilhard de Chardin was talking about, because of this horrible incident in history, we didn't do that. Ultimately, there were decisions made by people in positions of power which overwhelmed the possibility, just kind of like took it away from us. And I don't really mean to blame those in power, because we as a humanity We hadn't grown up enough, or hadn't grown enough toward our potential in order to avoid doing that, to avoid going along with it. So as a result, now we, I guess I don't want to go on about that.
No, you know what? I'm actually getting chills. I always get chills when I hear the truth, or I speak the truth, you know, universal truth, or speak it, or hear it, or sense it, and I'm my body is all chilled up. But the thing is, it's just, you said it. We're just not that evolved yet. And I always say that we're cave people, we're prehistoric. We're still prehistoric. But
yeah.
We are evolving, and we're just in a place where, in my opinion, we are going to get to that level of evolution where we don't even need words to speak. We will speak with our energy. We will speak with our – we're not in that place now.
But we're working on it. We're working as best we can. You and I, we have a mission, whether we know about it or not.
Yes.
Do the best we can to foster a kind of conscious evolution. That's a real possibility. People, we have in this world an opportunity and a capability of consciously evolving to becoming closer to the potential that we have had, we have always had, ever since we became aware. And I hope that... you know, everybody listening, all you folks out there, tell the young people,
yes.
Tell your friends, and love each other.
Well, this is the thing, and we're actually coming to the end of the show, which I cannot believe. It's just been, it seems like it's been 5 minutes. Well, that's an exaggeration, but it sounds good.
Six minutes.
What I always say is, you want to change the world. You want the world's consciousness to be elevated. That means that person in the mirror. You change. When your consciousness is elevated, when you are different, when you look at the world and you aren't, because back in 2001, 9/11, I mean, I was with everybody else. Kill, blow them all up. Hey, I was right there with them. But now I can't even imagine even thinking or being like that. I'm a totally different person. So when you, the person in the mirror, when you change, the world is elevated. So it's really an individual responsibility, and also to be the example of that consciousness, to be a living example of the awareness, to be the example of the universe, which is accepting. You said love. I love to say accepting it all with no preferences, because when you prefer, then you're not accepting. Acceptance is really big for me.
Yeah. Well, you're reminding me of something. It's a kind of metaphor that I sometimes use when talking about the Global Consciousness Project. In a way, I think it's fair to say that we each individually are like neurons in the brain. The neurons do their job. They just go on being neurons, and they do their job extremely well. They're not concerned about, you know, whether it's right or wrong. They just, they operate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we humans are a little bit like that. If we do our job as human beings, then we can do this. We can interconnect in the same way that the neurons do without trying, because there is a natural and normal interconnection that we share without knowing about it, without needing to know. And when we, you know, act human, when we become the best humans that we can be,
mm-hmm. then, to our potential.
When we have a really large number of people doing that, the necessary result will be something like a kind of growth of consciousness on a grand scale. And that ultimately is, I think, how we will, evolve to become the caretakers of the Earth.
Ultimately, I know. Yes. What a great, great conversation. Is there a way my listeners can? Well, there's links on the information on the radio site to contact you. Is anything else, because we're coming to the end of the show, that you would like to?
Well, it's right. Global-mind.org is the fast, the best website address, and there's a lot of information on there, including videos and interviews, and I wish this were recorded, and I'd put it on there, too.
Well, it is being recorded, yeah.
Well, I'd like a copy sometime to put on my website.
Well,
because it's wonderful talking with you.
Roger, the link, I sent you a link via email, and this conversation is going to go on till forever. The link is going to last forever. With no expiration date.
Excellent. Thank you.
So thank you so much for being a part of the show. I connect with you. I love the challenges back and forth. We have a lot of...
Me too.
Been to Esalen also, and also, what else did you say? You said something else. I said, I did that too. So I really appreciate you.
The mountains, Grand Canyon, all those wonderful places God created for us.
That's right.
Or
that's
we created.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much, Roger, for being on the show. I really appreciate it. And listeners, Reality Spirituality is heard every Saturday and Sunday at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. You can go to my website at RebeccaNorrington.com. If you want to email me, you can email me at info@RebeccaNorrington.com. Follow me on Twitter at RL Norrington. And if you've enjoyed the show, which I know that you have, just go to Facebook, Reality Spirituality on Facebook, and like the Reality Spirituality page. I want to just share with you one thing before I end. I want to remind you, my audience, who you are. You are a physical extension of the universe. You're always growing. You're always evolving. You're always changing. Love is patient, and love is kind. Be patient and be kind with yourself. Be your own best friend. You cannot have a happy ending to an unhappy journey. We're going to connect again next week. You've been listening to Reality Spirituality. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah.
Reality Spirituality.
It's a new experience.
Reality Spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man. You got a question for RLN?
Reality Spirituality.
Yeah, it's time to get some answers, baby.
Reality.